You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners on this week's Business Day Spotlight podcast for your weekly roundup of some of the top trending economics in South African news. And for this week, it seems to be quite an interesting week. We're hearing about SOEs. We've got some GDP figures that have come out and some speculation around the Saab actually being nationalized, printing more money as has been done in other countries. I think they're trying to go after what's called quantitative easing. But on the line, we are joined by an expert to sort of help us to maybe unpack some of these issues. We are joined by Prof. Adrian Saville, who is a lecturer at the Gordon Institute of Business Science, that's Gibbs, and he is also the Chief Executive Officer of Canon Asset Managers. How are you, Adrian?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm good, and it's great to be with you.
I think for us to just, you know, perhaps get going with this is the GDP figures that came out this week. I think that's the most topical thing at the moment. What are some of your comments just around this? Is it really as bad as people are saying, and can we get out of it?
It's alarming, I think, from or at least deeply concerning from at least two perspectives. The first is you have to go back to the global financial crisis to find a drawdown of this extent. In other words, you know, the last time we were hit this hard in a single quarter, we were in financial crisis. That we aren't in crisis and we've had a print this deep, I think in and of itself is worrying. And sure, you know, we can put up lots of explanations. Trump's trade war certainly plays into it. Anxiety or concerns heading into a general election is another component. Certainly, load shedding played a large role. But in and of itself, it's a worrying number. When you peel back the mask on that number and you start looking into what it is that actually, you know, the components that are responsible for that minus 3.2. From a production side, it is mining and manufacturing that explain almost all of that minus 3. Agriculture was the largest faller, but agriculture is a small sector. But if you put those three into a bucket from the production side, mining, agriculture, manufacturing, those are your labor-intensive and export-facing sectors. That's where you're going to get the most jobs established, or where you're going to be hit the hardest on job losses. And it's also where you're going to earn critical currency. If you look at the expenditure approach to recording GDP, the two pillars that you really want to be contributing to economic growth are investment spending and export spending. And it's those two pillars on the expenditure side that show the sharpest contraction. So whether you look at production or expenditure in measuring GDP, both of them deliver a very concerning scorecard on that quarterly print.
Yeah. So what are some of the reasons, I guess, because you've already highlighted manufacturing, mining, and agriculture as some of the things that are actually coming down. But if we're to drill down inside, I'm sure on the mining side, I think perhaps, you know, some of the labor unrest in the gold sector, for example, and, you know, perhaps in the platinum sector. But in agriculture, you know, what, are there any actual issues we can pinpoint?
Yeah, look, I think we need to be, you know, careful of sort of attributing it to a single factor. But for the sake of, you know, a jump off point in trying to identify the culprits, as you note in mining, the labor issues have certainly played a material role, especially the protracted strike at Sibanye. In the case of manufacturing, I think we can put this down to the material impact of quarter one load shedding, that Eskom had a heavy burden on the manufacturing sector. And in agriculture, well, you know, that is almost by its very nature an extremely cyclical sector. It's not unusual to see swings that we saw of, you know, minus 13, plus 13. That is not particularly unusual for agriculture. I wouldn't read too much into the agricultural sector. We know that it is a price taker. We know that weather plays a role, and those certainly had an impact here, that you've got volatile commodity prices, you've got weather. The other two perhaps are more self-inflicted than weather and global agricultural prices.
So now that, you know, we have elections that have gone out of the way, I guess, you know, now we want to sort of see, you know, what's going to happen in the future. And we know that the investment community had a sort of wait and watch approach on South Africa as they're waiting for elections to come in and happen. But now that they're out of the way, could we realistically be expecting some of those inflows to actually come into South Africa and perhaps spur some sort of growth? We know that the president had a lot of promises, you know, for money in his investment drive last year. Are we going to start seeing that coming through, or is it guaranteed? I think that's the big question.
Mm. I hate to be uncharitable in what is already a fairly glib setting.
Yeah.
It seems that South Africa is a country that is able to take a step forward and a step back almost at the same time. Forget about in the same week. We can almost do it at exactly the same time. So no sooner have we got over what was an anxious election process that I think very importantly saw the ANC secure a majority in which we can be confident that the policy that is made will be the policy that is set and established and stays. You know, I think that majority for the ANC was really important to confidence in the policy environment. You know, no sooner have we had that, then there is talk about reaching into the South African Reserve Bank's mandate and adjusting that to extend beyond the protection of the value of the rand. We've got this very disappointing economic number, which I think will print better in the next quarter, but it does suggest that 2019 is going to be an anemic year for economic growth. So no sooner have we sort of established that certainty, then there's like, hang on, you know, here's two things to worry about. The environment is far worse than we had anticipated. I mean, that minus 3.2 is much worse than consensus. And we are not, you know, some of the important policy aspects are still up for debate, the South African Reserve Bank being the case in point. The economic number, I think we can, you know, we can explain away. Fiddling with policy again on another front, I almost want to say, you know, with tears in my eyes, when will we get the message? You can move policy around as much as you like. The policy itself will not cause the social and economic outcome that you desire. You can't engineer those social and economic outcomes. What will engineer healthy social and economic outcomes, more than anything, is policy stability. That we urgently need. And in the absence of policy stability, that much promised investment at the end of last year is going to start putting its hands in its pockets and losing eye contact saying, you know, oh, well, you know, it's not quite what we imagined. And that committed number starts to become less of a committed number. There's reason for, I think, concern on this front.
I know, it's actually quite interesting. And then I guess for a moment, I just wanted to, you know, perhaps get a sense from you, because you are in the investment space, and perhaps getting a sense of some of the sentiment that's around the South African economy, I guess, from an equities point of view or different asset classes. How are we looking at the moment? Because yes, we've got the GDP figures that have come out yesterday, but on the ground, what are investors actually saying?
I think if you treat the four sort of broad asset classes and try and get a sense of, you know, how each of those is priced and their relative attraction in a difficult economic circumstance, it's hard to make a case for everything other than cash. you know, inflation is printing at 4% and cash is offering you 8%. If you look at the pre-tax return, which many people can sort of look past because of tax-free savings accounts at the individual level, you know, at the corporate level, your tax rate is not your personal income marginal tax rate, but rather a much lower corporate tax rate. So, you know, in and of itself, cash is actually looking like a reasonably attractive option. Having said that, government bonds, which have a yield of better than 8.5%, also, yeah, I think, make quite a compelling case. Then, the problem with both of those asset classes, or my reservation about the appeal of both of those asset classes, when you translate it into the story of what does that mean for the economy, is those are essentially unproductive asset classes. If people put money into government bonds or cash, it doesn't translate into investment. It's what we call hot money or financial asset. The more productive assets, equity and property, where you're likely to see real activity by, you know, higher confidence and greater flows of money. Sure, those are still financial assets, but they would be a real demonstration of confidence. These have both been on the back foot for some time, I think, reflecting, in the case of property, certainly a very inflated asset class 2 or 3 years ago. That's come right off the boil, and it's had to wrestle with accounting and governance issues on top of the difficult economy. And before I run out of breath, the same thing in equities. You know, look at the, can I call Tongaat a scandal now? You know, the accounting issues going on at Tongaat. You know, that on the back of the disaster at Steinhoff. So you're dealing with not only a difficult economic circumstance, but you're being given numbers that have been massaged or manipulated by the people who are supposed to be the responsible stewards of this money. So before we jump up and down and get all hot under the collar about, you know, what government needs to do, I think we should pause for breath here and recognize that the private sector is playing a role in this fraught, tough economic circumstance.
I like the fact that you are highlighting the fact that as much as things are not well in the public sector, that the private sector has had its own, you know, fair share of what word can we use? Discrepancies.
You know, and we can put other examples there. You know, AO Technologies would be a case, and EOH another case in point. So it's not just, you know, one or two. It's a raft, and you can put that raft alongside the Eskom South African Airways raft, and wow, you know, this is a large corporate problem.
Yes. But in coming to that issue of SAA and Eskom, and, you know, how corporates are being run, whether the public and private sector, I think SAA and Eskom, two of our biggest SOEs, CEOs resigning within a week or so of each other, and both of them quite embattled, you know, dire balance sheets, massive debts. Is the state or is South Africa and corporate culture what you're talking about just now? Are we creating an enabling environment for the success of some of our corporates, even these in the public sector?
I love the angle of your question because, you know, your reference to corporates recognizes that it's not ownership that matters. It's how the entity is run and behaves. So whether it is private owned or public owned, I don't think is the issue here as much as how is it behaving? How is it performing? Is the management delivering? Over the last 10 years, the ease of doing business in South Africa moved from, you'll forgive me, my numbers are approximately right, they're not exactly right, but over the last 10 years, the ease of doing business in South Africa moved from 30th in the world to 80th in the world.
Oh, wow.
We made the business environment through our policies and regulations 50 points more harder than it was a decade ago. Over the same decade, the ease of doing business in Rwanda moved from 80th in the world to 30th in the world.
So we did a swap and change.
Yeah, you know, Rwanda's recording 7% economic growth. Sure, it's off a low base, but you know, it's 7%, and Rwanda's been doing this now for the better part of not 10 years, not 20 years, but 25 years uninterrupted economic growth. Whilst they've taken their ease of business from 80th to 30th, South Africa is stuttering and stumbling with 0 and 1 economic growth, lower than population growth, with a mindset that we can regulate or legislate our way into prosperity. That hasn't been done anywhere else. I'm not sure why South Africa as a collective thinks we can do it.
It is quite an interesting question. And on that legislation and regulation part and the policy issues you were talking about earlier on, it then begs the question in terms of running some of our corporates around, you know, this issue of nationalization. It's not going away. And I think, you know, when you have some of these resignations, it brings it back up again because it makes you wonder, you know, is it that they're being run wrong? Should they be in private as opposed to public hands? So in your view, is it possible for us to perhaps replicate some of the success that we've seen from Telkom ever since it became a publicly listed company with some of the other SOEs that are ailing at the moment?
What's happened in the case of Telkom, I would venture, is, you know, it's perhaps had a triple whammy. The first is it's participated in a sector that has generally been, you know, fairly resilient, quite buoyant over a tough economic period. And that economic period extends from really, you know, from global financial crisis to present. South Africa hasn't experienced anything that would remotely resemble economic buoyancy. So we've had a tough 10 years, but, you know, the telco sector has a resilience that many other sectors haven't enjoyed. So I think that's one aspect that has perhaps played into their hands. The other two, though, are, I would venture, of their own doing or of policymakers, governments as a shareholder's doing. The first is by putting the business onto the market and into the public arena, it established it sort of shone a light, you know, on the business, established an accountability and insisted on good governance. So, you know, I think that's been by design of the system. You cannot take away from here in the case of Telkom, though, is an exceptional chairman and an extraordinary CEO. And, you know, that that is a powerful team that has translated into a really good business outcome. I think there's lots of messaging in that. You know, never lose sight of the economy. The economy plays a big role in business performance. Know that your regulations and policy are going to play a role, and you want good governance and strong rules and transparency. But the people in charge of the enterprise are also pivotal in shaping the destiny.
Mm. I know it looks like there's a lot that actually, you know, needs to be done when it comes to there. So I guess finally, as we round up our discussion, what is your outlook for South Africa, I guess, from an economy point of view for the next, 12 to 24 months? Do you see us being able to put some of those GDP numbers up? If so, what, you know, sectors do you think might give us some type of hope?
Look, to borrow your word there, my hope is that Cyril Ramaphosa's words turn into reality. I'm at the front of the queue, in terms of wishing for, desiring, job-creating economic growth. I desperately want his ambition of $100 billion foreign investment to translate into reality. The urging that the private sector steps in and lifts its investment record and starts looking to South Africa as the creator of business opportunity, not Eastern Europe and North America and Australia as their source of salvation. That's hope. And I hope that those things transpire. The reality is I would anticipate you'll see a better second quarter. Eskom has been stable in terms of energy generation. So you should see some recovery in the manufacturing sector. The mining strikes have been resolved, so that production should return. Agricultural sector will reverse some of its seesawing or yo-yo behavior. So those three big negatives should all come in better in the second quarter than the first quarter. Having said that, it's unlikely to be enough to, as things stand, translate into fast or buoyant economic circumstances. I would suggest that we're looking at economic growth probably in the 0 to 1% range for 2019, which is beyond disappointing. It's deeply concerning if you put that up against our 10-year track record of directionless economic performance. Population growth of 1.5%, which means income per capita are going backwards. In itself, that's a poor measure because of our very elevated unemployment numbers and especially youth unemployment. I put onto my Twitter feed the observation that Cyril Ramaphosa's work is cut out for him. South Africa's work is cut out. We have a critical job to do, and that is to get this economy and its social impact into shape, and it is no longer a talking point. Our sleeves have to be rolled up, and we've got to get into action.
So that was us on the line with Prof. Adrian Saville, who is the CEO of Canon Asset Managers and a lecturer at the Gibbs Business School, saying to us that he hopes that the $100 billion that was promised to South Africa will actually flow into the country, and that we all as a collective need to roll up our sleeves and put into action some of the policies and some of the actions that have actually been mandated for the country. And also, you know, just highlighting the fact that when it comes to South Africa's corporates, the culture around both the public and private sector actually needs to be resolved, because on either side of the aisle, things are not where they should be, and that does not inspire any type of confidence in investors and in the economy. He did mention just now that he had put something out on his Twitter, so I'm just going to ask if, Adrian, you could just tell us how people can actually follow you on social media for those that may be interested in some of your commentary.
Thank you. My Twitter handle is my name, at Adrian Saville, AdrianSaville. They can also find me through my Gordon Institute of Business Science profile, which is the Center for African Management and Markets, or through my business profile, which is at Canon Assets. Any one of those three avenues will hopefully bring us into contact and conversation.
Okay, cool. So you heard there, you can follow him, one of the three profiles. Thank you so much to Prof. Adrian for being with us on the show. So that brings us to the end of Business Day Spotlight for this week. Remember that you can catch us on Business Live under the title Podcast Business Day Spotlight. And on Twitter, our hashtag is #BDSpotlight. Remember as well that you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. So for myself, Mudiwa Gavaza of The Business Day, together with our producer, Paige Mueller, this has been a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. Remember that The Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production.